Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. If you want a first-hand account of the history of Southwest Washington, the best place to start is likely the Apollo Archives in Nacelle. The archives were founded in 2005 by Carlton Apollo, a community leader and businessman like his Finnish immigrant father, C.A. Carlton spent more than 30 years collecting articles and artifacts of Wakayakum and Pacific counties, and documenting the history and culture of the area. He celebrated his birthday last Saturday, and at the age of 91, he still signs the checks at Wakayakum West Telephone Company as its president and CEO. He's worked for the company, founded by his father, since the age of 10. Carlton Apollo was born in 1922 in a boat just outside the then-bustling logging town of Deep River. He grew up working in his parents' store and covering some night shifts for the then-new phone company. We talked with him about his life and times at the seaside retirement community where he now lives. He says he chose it because the food was good.
Well, we had a daily boat that ran from Deep River, that's where I lived, to Astoria. And it was 25 cents each way, you know, on our boat. And but if you wanted to go on the big Megler ferry, it was $1.50. But our boat only ran once a day, and it didn't have much power to it. So they would, in those days, the logs were 8-10 feet in diameter. It was Douglas fir, you know, and it was, this whole area was just a rainforest, and you know, even the Indians didn't have much to do. The Indians moved with the crops, you know. In the winter time, they would go in the woods and collect things up there, and summertime they'd fish during the fishing season, and that's how Lewis and Clark found them, and that's kind of interesting story too. My father actually left Finland when he was 16, because he said that when he was 17, the Russian army took over the young people. So he didn't have much money, but he borrowed enough to get on a boat to got to Ellis Island. But he had a cousin that lived in Michigan on the western edge of Lake Superior. And he knew if he got to Lake Superior, that he'd be able to talk to her and probably learn some English. And, you know, she could teach him. So he spent the winter there kind of working. But all he knew was a little bit about logging, because their main industry there, other than farming and a little fishing, was cutting these 2-meter poles that they put in the coal mines to hold the roof up. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only experience that he had as a, you know, to earn something. So my father just kept working in these logging camps until he got to the west coast, and when he landed in Deep River.
And what drew him out here? Was it just the way the work?
Or? Well, he knew that there were some friend, you know, some of the Finns that he had heard, and some of the Swedes said that it was good fishing down there, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of logging. But the logging was, you know, they didn't have small stuff. They had about 10, 12 foot Douglas fir, you know, they were just a forest of all that. But then the problem was, when they got it cut down, what do you do with it? It was in the woods, so if there was a canyon anywhere nearby, they would roll it with jacks. They'd roll it into the canyon and build a dam mm-hmm. there with, you know, just the dirt. And as it filled up, it would float. And they'd dynamite that and go down, you know, a long ways. And of course, Deep River is not a river; it's a slough. Mm-hmm. It had a tide twice a day, and that's how I happened to be born. Is that the boat, Astoria, was our medical center, in the boat. I left for Astoria, and my mother, you know, she wasn't quite ready. Well, it wasn't an hour or two till she got labor pains. And so she had to really do something. So she got a hold of C.J. Workla, who was our county commissioner there, but he had a Columbia River fish boat. And so she got Grandma Matta, who was a midwife, to go with her, and my aunt Pearl, who was just a teenage girl. And, you know, she spoke Finnish, and so did Matta. She was a Finnish lady. So they delivered me there. And so then my father started, you know, always working in his logging camp. And there was a big store across the river owned by William Anderson. And he built this. It was a huge building on pilings in the river, and it had two stories in it, and, you know, all kinds of merchandise that you know, the people, it was like a little, like a supermarket on a small rural scale. But right across the river was a boarding house that a man by the name of Haru had purchased, and it was two stories. And so he rented out the rooms. But then he had a fire, and it burnt the upstairs part. So what had happened, they just had kerosene lamps at the time, and had some curtains, and they blew over the curtains and got the thing. But they were able to throw enough water with buckets to stop the fire. Mm-hmm. So he had this building then, and then he decided that, well, he's got to do something. So he started buying a few things that loggers would use, and soap and cans. You know, they finally got some cows, because they were used to having cows. And at one time, our county had 300 dairies, mm-hmm. but all they were was just they had three or four cows and maybe a pig, and these logs came down, and they were three on a big flat car, two side by side and one in the middle, and they had little wedge blocks to hold them in place, mm-hmm. because they had to come down, and they built a railroad as they went in the woods. They kept building this, extending this railroad, and my father said that if you found an empty room, you just you put your bedroll there and said, "I'm going to stay here now." And I think they were had to pay $1 a day for it. So that's how he got started. And then Mr. Anderson, he didn't like competition, and he was afraid that Harvey might put him out of business. Well, you know, Harvey, he didn't know anything about merchandising, didn't have much money, but Anderson was worried about it. So he was a postmaster, he would open the mail to see how much Harvey paid for merchandise.
Oh.
He wanted to see if he got a good deal or not. But his son helped him out, and his son was kind of careless. And he didn't seal the envelopes very much. So what happened, I'll shorten the story, but anyhow, they canned him as a postmaster, and then they had to find a postmaster. And someone said, well, this apple that lives across the river there, when this guy opened the mail, they had to, he wanted to know, and Harvey wanted to know who was opening the mail, and they found out that it was Anderson's son, and he was careless, and anyhow, what happened, Anderson was canned on the spot, and they asked C.A., my father was Carl Arthur, mm-hmm. but he always went by C.A.,
yeah.
And they asked C.A., why don't you be a postmaster? He said, "Oh, I don't know. I don't have my first papers yet. I don't know anything about what does a postmaster do." And he said, "Well, he delivers mail." So there was a guy over and had worked at Rossburg, which was another little store, and his Basil Camber, he came over and taught him how to do that, and so then what happened, then I was born, they were going to go to Astoria, but the boat had gone, and so they got C.J. Workla to use his boat and use Mrs. Matta and Pearl, and then I was delivered that way, and where I started to grow up. And then my mother said that I don't want him to be the only one in the family, he needs some company. And so she became pregnant again, and she had twin girls, but they died in childbirth. There was some argument about what happened. She got pushed over some box in or case in the store, but anyhow, they died, and after a while she said, "Well, he still needs a company." So she got pregnant again, and my brother Burton was born. Mm-hmm. And he's 5 years younger than I. And he was born in 1927. And it was the same year that Lindbergh flew across the from New York to Paris.
At the time you were growing up there, how was the population of that area pretty large at that time? Was it larger than now?
Oh, yeah, much larger than now. See, the logging camps were all hand labor. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they didn't even have steam donkeys or any of those kind of things. So what they did, they got some oxen, and they made, they took small trees and peeled all the bark off, and then they made the big log that they had, and cut it in a 32-foot length, and they took all the bark off of that, and then these oxen would pull them down on this skid thing until they got down to the river. And when they got down to the river, they wanted to head to Astoria, so when the tide went out, they would move the raft, and the raft was just made with a necklace of a little log chained together. It was kind of like a parcel. And so whenever they wanted to move, if it was downstream, the tide went out, and it was upstream, it would come in, and so that's how they handled it, how they handled before they had any other physical means. And eventually they developed steam donkeys. Some guy back in Wisconsin that invented a donkey that used that. It was had a cable pull, and so they pulled the logs down to tidewater, and then they moved them in tidewater. Mm-hmm. And you asked if there were many people. The camp there had about 200 men working, mm-hmm. because everything was hand powered. These big they fell the trees, and then they had to bark them, and so there was a lot of labor involved, but it was physical labor. Mm-hmm. And that type of work takes a lot of calories, so right. We were able to sell food, beans and Finland had a lot of root crop, rutabagas, turnips,
sure.
Carrots, that. And I suppose Lithuania is the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't have lettuce or tomatoes. Or, right. In fact, tomatoes they thought were poisoned.
Right.
So anyhow, that's how my father finally got started, and so I grew up. And when we had our switchboard, and it's up there at the Archive Center, mm-hmm. It was upstairs, but the bells were in my parents' bedroom, and we slept in the other room. So when we got to be 10 years old, somebody had to get up at night and answer the phone and see. It wasn't any number, it was just a crank, and ours was short, long, mm-hmm. and some of them were long, two shorts, and do that. And 911 was a long, long, long ring. Mm-hmm. Everybody get on, and so that's how it got started. And we grew up there. There was a schoolhouse up on the hill that they were able to erect, and there was a two-story building. The downstairs was just full of cut lumber because they heated it by steam heat, you know, in there, or the heat would rise to the upper floor. We graduated from kerosene lamps to gas lamps. Mm-hmm. That was a different principle, and you pumped it in, and the gas would vaporize, and this thing would burn, and finally we got to the 32 volt plant, and kept growing. But my father, he was so enterprising. He saw that people used to go to Astoria for a haircut, so he got a used barber chair, and he started cutting hair. And so then they sold cream. That was what they made the butter. They had these separators, you know, crank, and it threw out the cream was lighter. It would go to the top, and then the milk would be in the bottom. So they take that stuff on top and put it in small cans and sell it and send it over to Astoria, and they made butter out of it. They gradually built up, and then Dino Valve was the separator firm that was the best one in the business. It was a catalog for the business. Mm-hmm. And they were sold all over the country, just like General Motors, you know, today. And but a Finnish firm called Lacta, L-A-C-T-A, developed a competitive machine, and it was made in Finland but shipped to Chicago, and then they got salesmen. So my father had a Model T car that he modified, put a little kind of a bed in it, and he put two or three separators, and he'd go around and he'd pick a farmer that looked like he had pretty good, he had a lot of cows, and then he'd come in with his razor, his barber tool, and said that you look like you had a haircut. And then they said, well, I don't think he needs a haircut, you know, he can get that in that story. No, I cut hair, and I'll do it for nothing, you know, because I just want to learn how to do it. So that's how he did. So he ended up, he knew farmers all the way from Deep River down to San Diego. And later on, we made a tour and visited some of those farms. But he was enterprising. Whenever there was an opportunity to make money, he would take the opportunity because we were always short of money.
So that was kind of a bustling area at the time you were growing up.
It was.
And I guess Astoria was a bigger town then, too.
Astoria was a center. You know, it was a metropolis. Warrenton, all it had was a cemetery and a few houses. Mm-hmm. With the twin girls that were buried up there. And then later on, my grandparents were buried there.
Well, what was it like for you growing up at that time? Were you, did you have kind of a fancy free childhood, or were you expected to kind of go to work pretty early as a kid?
When you got to be 10 years old, you took a night shift. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to get up and answer the phone. But, you know, the farmers went to bed, so it didn't happen very often. But anyhow, you had to, you know, listen. So when the bells would ring, you'd go in and answer the phone and do whatever you could. And we finally got what they call long distance. It went from Deeper to Cathlamet. And Cathlamet had a bigger company, and they ran some submarine cable over to Puget Island and then over to Westport. And then they went out, you know, to different places there, and finally over to Astoria. And then later on, they built the cable into Astoria. And it kept slowly expanding that way. So my father knew nothing about the telephone business, but he had to learn. and he, that's in 1952, he got started with him. He went to Olympia to file for a corporation report. They got incorporated and found out that the company that was serving around from Nacelle to Chinook had not filed for a franchise. So he filed for one, you know, in his name. And they said, you can't do that. And he said, well, it wasn't taken. So that's how he got into that part of the business. Well, every time you see a bunch of pilots, you know there was some kind of activity. And they had Puget Island, they had a great guy, a steam pilot driver. And they just go on with these kind of big channels and they just wind it up and drop it down, and that's how they drove those pilings. So every time you see some pilings in the river today, it was some type of an enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've written pretty extensively about many of the towns in Wakayakum County and yes. Pacific County, and one at Napton. Now, we look at Napton now, and there's sort of nothing there, but what was Napton like before?
Napton was called Cementville. Found out there was some rock there that would make into cement. And so an entrepreneur got started, and you know, he really geared up and invested something, and then they ran out of the raw material. So they were going to go out of business, and they said, well, we've been shipping our logs over to Astoria to be milled. Why don't we mill them in Napton? So they started making a sawmill there. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon it became the largest employer that we had in the whole region. In fact, they even hired some Chinese to work with them, because the salmon, in order to be useful, they had to fit in these number two cans. They're about that high, and so they developed a big, a multiple knife that was called just lay the salmon in there and twist it, and they come out with these slices, and they fit right in the can, and they had the steam retorts, and they would boil them in there under pressure, and of course, and that's what brought Megler. He was a tinsmith, that's why he came, but he finally decided that there was a better place upstream, so he went up to Brookfield, up between Smockaway and Pillar Rock and that area. And so there was a cannery at Altoona, one at Pillar Rock, and each one of them kept the cannery, but the biggest one is in Altoona, that developed that area. So gradually, we lived off our native resources. Mm-hmm. That was our major thing. We didn't, it got so the salmon, when they decided that they could seal it in cans, then they could ship it. And so they had a big market in Europe. And when I started running the telephone company, I finally joined an outfit called Patsco. It's the Organization for the Protection and Advancement of Small Telephone Companies. That's what OPASTCO meant. And they were formed down in Arkansas area. But they were pretty militant, because they were fighting the Bell system down there. And of course, we found out they were pretty effective. But they had a convention in Seattle. And when I met some of the people, I decided I'd join it. And so they needed a representative from the Northwest, so I got on the board of directors, and finally I was elected president. So I made two tours. I made one tour of Europe with a group. We went 2 years later, we went to the Orient, and we visited Thailand and China. Got involved in something, I had this business experience, you know, from a child almost. Mm-hmm. So I ended up in either starting something or in charge of it. And that's how I got interested in many, many different things.
Well, tell me about the archives and how that came about.
Well, I kept, I always had an interest in newspapers and clippings. I used to clip out the articles, and whenever there was for one thing, I knew so many people that either got married or died or something, so I'd make a clipping, and pretty soon I had boxes and boxes full. And we had a house up the upper Nacelle River. We called it the Retreat, but it was a two-story building, and but I got one corner. It was got all full of banker boxes that were these clippings, you know, hundreds of clippings. And so my wife Bernice said, "Well, this is going to be like a warehouse. You know, why don't you find some place else to put it?" So we had this building over Nacelle that, you know, didn't it had space. So we started putting stuff in there, and then we put a little furniture and a few items, and then we got a lady to sell soup and bread, and they got the, you know, little breakfast item or knickknacks, they got a food permit so they could do a little cooking, and so
you can go get some good soup and some good bread.
That's right.
And I guess the archives are particularly good for somebody who's interested in Finnish history.
Yeah,
here.
It's specialized in Scandinavian, you know, not only Finnish, but Swedish and anything. The big element, and the other element is Minnesota and Wisconsin, and there's a few other isolated areas around. Well, I came back. I was on Okinawa until about a year and a half after the war was over, because we couldn't leave until we cleaned up our area. And so, what in our case, we had thousands and thousands of cases of food. So we arranged, and the natives there, and they were farmers, and we leveled their field, you know, their hills, and made airfields, and so we had to do something to kind of help them out. The Naha City, the capital, was full of sunken ships. There was kamikaze people that crash in, and that. So we had to load with amphibious ducks, you know, bring them in, and that was our job, my company's job. It was a Negro company that had 206 Negroes and four white officers. Well, I was helping process some of the troops that were going back from Okinawa, going back home, and we were watching a movie, and there was a dead tank there, a sunken tank. There was a Japanese guy that, you know, had been hiding in the brush. So he was up there in the turret of this tank, you know, watching it. And somebody saw that, and they had thought it was a invasion. So they yelled "Jap," and everybody stopped. And they hauled a guy out, and I said, "Well, don't hurt him, because he was just innocent." Well, the thing that really made America great was that everybody was a part of the war effort.
Historian Carlton Apollo, founder of the Apollo Archives in Nacelle. The archives are open Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4 and Saturday from 10 to 2. They're located at 1056 State Route 4. As we wound up our interview, Carlton added a little plug for KMUN, and we'll use that to wind up this edition of The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca.
Well, I like the KMUN for many reasons. Is that they had weather reports and ship lines in the morning. They always had that report. They had spot NPR news, which was another thing that was very interesting. And so I always enjoy KMUN, and you know, you can turn it off or turn it on, but no matter when you do it, it's something that's attractive.